Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Today's our second segment in the seven-week series, our third annual franchise legal series right here on Franchise Today. Last week, our guest was Lane Fisher of Fisher Zucker, as we spoke about private equity and franchising, and of course, that segment, as well as all segments of Franchise Today, are available on demand at www.blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Joining me today is our co-producer, Joe Caruso. Joe, how are you today?
Fantastic, Paul. How are things down in Texas?
Not bad. I know you were at the Small Business Lending Summit the other day. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get there. Give us a quick overview, if you would, because I know a lot of our listeners are interested in the credit access and small business lending right now.
Well, the Small Business Lending Summit was held in D.C. at the J.W. Marriott, and very, very well attended. They had 305 attendees, and it was a real cross-section of franchising, business, government, you know, the National Association of Government Guaranteed Lenders, of course, the IFA, CIT, American Express, a bunch of people from the Asian American Hotel Operators Association. As you can imagine, credit access in the hotel industry is a very, very big deal. Our friends at Fran Data, Bowfly. There was a lot, and there was a lot covered. I mean, it was action packed. I mean, it went from the morning until mid afternoon, and I think the gist of it was that the lending picture is improving. Credit access is easier than it was, since 2008. But it's not where it needs to be. Karen Mills from the SBA painted a very positive picture for SBA guaranteed lending. And as you may or may not know, her position was elevated to a cabinet position in the Obama mm-hmm. administration here. So there certainly is a bright light on credit access, and there seems to be a great partnership between the IFA and the SBA and the administration to be able to improve lending. But we're not out of the woods yet. It's not easy for everybody, and a number of the panelists that were franchisors and franchisees are still experiencing a great deal of difficulty, even when they're qualified financially to get loans. They're still having challenges in getting them.
Well, it was good that you were there to report. I look forward to hearing more. I know I followed the Twitter feed all day, retweeted a whole bunch, so it definitely seemed like a lot of information coming out of it, and I'm sure we'll be reading about it and hearing about it for weeks to come. As you know, this week our guest on Franchise Today in our second segment in a series of seven on the Franchise Legal Series is Lee Plave from Plave Cook. But before we get into that, why don't you give us a rundown of the upcoming shows within the Franchise Legal Series?
Fantastic. We've got next week a show on safety and vigilance, leveraging franchise sales outsourcing with Mark Kirsch, also a Plave Cook. Then we'll be moving on to Warren Lewis, where he'll be talking about franchise compliance basics and earnings claims. Then on to Ken Prine, litigation and technology in franchising. It's complicated, so maybe Ken will be able to uncomplicate it for us a little bit. Then we'll have Michael Webster talking about the dynamics of winning franchisee-franchisor relationships. And then finally, we'll end the series with a recap of the IFA Legal Symposium, What Do Franchise Lawyers Talk About?
Well, definitely action-packed, and I know you've been putting in a lot of time and effort in putting together these shows and producing them, and I really do appreciate it. As I said, we have Lee Plave on today, co-founding partner of Plave Cook. I love the fact that it's a franchise law with zing, which I always smile every time I see that caption. Lee, of course, is an expert in drafting and negotiating franchise agreements for complex international and domestic transactions and advising clients in all aspects of franchise law and compliance. Lee is also a very prominent member of the IFA's Technology Committee, and I'll be happy to be working with Lee as I was just named to the committee as well. Lee, welcome back to Franchise Today.
Thank you, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, Lee, I saw something this morning and on the Facebook feed, and I wanted to just read it real quick. It says, with the Summer Olympics 100 days away, companies are preparing for the first social media Olympics. This summer, London will host the first Olympics where most of the advertising and marketing by companies will be done through social media, and also the first games where it's expected that record numbers of live interaction will occur between fans across the world. And I read that, and I had to ask the question, do you still think social media is a fad? And I know that brings a smile to your face.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because we're going through cycles of national and international events where, in some respects, it's the first of the many that have occurred with social media and social networking as a substantial backdrop. For example, the 2012 presidential elections here in the United States. While the 2008 race had a very healthy element of social networking and social media, the development in that field has been so dramatic that it really remains to be seen how this plays out. We saw earlier this year, and somewhat of an example, but perhaps one that wasn't fully anticipated, major national changes in certain social areas because of the ability of people to communicate with one another through social networking. One may argue that was part of the entire Arab Spring concept. You can certainly make the argument that some of the pressure that was brought to bear on the Susan G. Komen Foundation as a result of its relationship to Planned Parenthood was a result of the pressure that social media, social networking folks brought to bear. It may have had a substantial impact on the Trayvon Martin thing, the Occupy Wall Street movement substantially impacted and expanded by that. And the same will hold true, I'm sure, for political campaigns and ultimately for businesses as well.
Yeah, I think so. It makes me think back to the day of Woodstock where 1 million people got together without social media, and one has to think, what would that be like today with social media? I just couldn't even imagine it.
Yeah, it is genuinely an amazing change in people's ability to communicate with one another, and I don't think we can imagine, let alone conclude, that we have seen all of the impact that it will have in the short and near term.
You know, I mentioned at the top of the show that you're a member of the IFA's Technology Committee, and if you would, before we get into the meat of today's show, give us a little bit of rundown on your experience as you got to visit with Facebook and Google, which of course led towards, I think right now just Facebook is a member of the IFA, but if I'm wrong, if Google has also come on board, let me know. But I know they're in the process.
Yeah, well, first of all, we're looking forward to having you on the committee as well because you're involved as well.
I appreciate
that.
It's
an interesting group of folks, and we have interesting conversations. The backdrop to it was that Ken Colburn, who goes by the handle the Data Doc on Twitter, and who is a fantastic fellow who runs the the Data Doctors franchise system and is rather experienced in the area. And he himself is a media presence in his own home market in Tempe, Arizona. Ken and I were the core of the social media task force, and we decided that we would set out and try to present to the folks at Facebook and Google somewhat of a ludicrous proposition, which was that in exchange for what they wanted, we wanted to get what we wanted. And what they wanted was accurate information on the location, the identity, and the like of franchised businesses, because they would find it helpful to provide useful, accurate, and up-to-date information to their users, since that's the heart and soul of social media and social networking is the accuracy of the information that we all get. In exchange, what we asked for was something very simple, but yet preposterous, and that was, we'd like to control the brands on Facebook mm-hmm. and in Google. And when I say Google, what I mean is not the search engine portion of it, although that would be lovely, but rather what they now call Places, but has had various names, offers and the like, throughout the course of its history. And we had very constructive meetings with both of them in California. And the color of the meetings was fantastic. Of course, you go to these meetings, and it's a totally different kind of an environment than you typically see in conventional business formats. But be that as it may, very smart people on both sides. I do believe, by the way, that both companies have joined IFA. They certainly mm-hmm. both attended and spoke at the IFA convention this year in Orlando and mm-hmm. spoke with great conviction about their passion for the involvement of franchisors and franchisees alike. And let's face it, there is some degree of self-motivation to that. They can reach hundreds and hundreds of thousands of businesses by coordinating through franchisors. There's an awful lot of logic to that. There's an awful lot of efficiency to that. And those of us who were there, and I hope many of our listeners were, will recall that as part of his conversation, the gentleman from Facebook explained that Facebook would, in fact, extend the so-called parent-child architecture that they had envisioned to help franchisors, in fact, control their brands online in the Facebook environment to franchisors who attended the IFA convention without any cost or any minimum spend to do so. That was, you know, that was the culmination of a year and a half's worth of efforts mm-hmm. successfully. It was, to some extent, another preposterous to think that it could happen in the first instance, but it was inordinately gratifying to hear. And we negotiated with them, Ken and I and the folks from Facebook, in the back of a car as we were heading to dinner the night before the final event, to negotiate out the terms under which the next morning it would be announced by the IFA's chairman that this was in fact the approach that was being taken. So we were very fortunate that it came to pass. We were very fortunate that Facebook recognized the value that franchising can offer to their business, and the legitimate need of franchisors to be able to have some element of control over how their brands are used in those environments. And at the end of it all, it was an extremely satisfying experience, and now franchisors are let loose to sort of make it happen.
Well, it was certainly a great and much appreciated effort on your part, on Ken's part, and certainly I look to become more involved in that as I enter the year on the technology committee as well. You know, our topic today, of course, is social media and technology, a moving target for franchising. And of course, it seems, I mean, it appears, we know that social media and social networking have managed to weave themselves into the very fabric of our lives, as you all talked about what had gone on in the Middle East and with all the different events in politics and the elections, et cetera. You know, Facebook, Foursquare, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, Pinterest are now everyday tools for people of every age. It always amazes me in these different groups to see how the demographics are just evolving, where, you know, a couple of years ago it was, oh, nobody over the age of 30 is on Facebook, and now the fastest growing groups on Facebook are, you know, females over the age of 50. And it seems to me, as I'm entrenched in it, you know, that for franchise brands, it's really time to accept that brave new world and make this, you know, work for them. And I say it's time because so many are still behind the curve. Now, how do you recommend a franchisor start to strategically look at the practical and legal issues of social media and social networking?
Well, it's a very good question. You know, to a large extent, there are two or three different tracks here, it would seem to me. One of them is the simple business question of what do you want to do? What's your goal in using social media? It can't just be to use social media. It's got to have the exercise. And when we say social media, I think we're really referring to both social media and social networking. We sometimes use them interchangeably, and unless we really mean blogging as social media and Facebook and sites like that as social networks, I think they're largely understood to be the same thing, at least colloquially. But the goal that franchisors have is different than every industry. In some places, the goal is to drive business into the bricks and mortar locations. And franchisors who have that as their goal, as the strategy that they want to pursue, will use a different approach in terms of the tactics they implement to try to accomplish that. The same holds true if what the franchisor is seeking to accomplish is a dialogue with consumers. Of course, the question is, to what end? But if the dialogue with consumers is to hear their feedback, to learn from their experience, to improve the product or the service that's being offered, so much the better. If it's because the business is one where it's, for example, we have some clients who are in the business of marketing services to young families. In that instance, the feedback and the discussion among the families whom they serve, which is not always, but principally among the mothers and the fathers who bring their kids to the events, play events and the like, that's valuable. It's fantastic because not only does it validate the consumer's choice of that business in the first place, but it also gives the franchisor an opportunity and the franchisees an opportunity to hear what worked, what didn't work, what really made the party special for the kid, what disappointments were there. And when you learn that, you know, that's invaluable to be able to take that knowledge and to apply it so that you make your business resonate better with your customers. And so I think it really comes down to, firstly, from a business side, what's your strategy? Know your strategy. Talk to some people who've done it. Talk to some smart folks from the outside who can help you understand the strategic goal, even if you're already into it. You may have started down one path and only with experience have you learned that that's not really what you need to accomplish. You may have started down the path of trying to drive sales in an online setting and realizing that it's not that valuable, but you're really doing a great job of getting customers and potential customers excited about visiting your bricks and mortar locations. Well, adapt. The medium is meant to be used that way. If your goal is to drive image, well, drive image. If your goal is a dialogue with consumers, understand the dynamics, understand the implications, and go for it. From a legal side, which is sometimes, I think, the way that people, the only way that some people look at it, and I don't think that's really the right way, you've got to see the both of them together. You've got to look at what controls you have in place in your agreements, what ability you have as a practical matter to monitor usage, and what structures you have available to you to try to do a good job of understanding what's being said about your brand, because the difference between legal considerations and branding considerations is hard to sometimes discern. The difference is often insubstantial. It's a trademark issue frequently becomes a branding issue, and a branding issue frequently becomes a trademark issue, and betwixt the twain always meet. So you've really got to know what your basis is in your agreements. In almost all instances, franchisors have some degree of control because they have two clauses. One is you can't use our trademarks without our prior written consent, and the second one is you can't advertise without our prior written consent. If you have those basic provisions in place. While I wouldn't say that it's enough in the modern context, it's sufficient for you to be able to substantially influence the outcome.
The, you know, there's as you said, I mean, there's just so many different potential goals and objectives, and I think, you know, too many take a one-size-fits-all type of strategy approach. And I think a lot of times also there's the ready, fire, aim approach, and then throw up their hands and say this doesn't work. So I think you're right on point with, you know, figure out what you want to do with it. I know we talk about that a lot at Franchise Essentials about our social media e-idea, which is just a very simple process in order to force franchise organizations to go through the process and think about it. And I think a lot of times they lose sight of the necessity of sub-strategies because there are different topics and there are targets and there are different objectives, whether it be, you know, creating brand awareness, driving consumers into the locations, or generating interest in the franchise sales opportunity. And I've even consulted with some organizations and used it to improve communications throughout the franchise system. So, you know, looking at it and understanding that even with every objective, there might be a subset strategy. From what you've seen working with many franchise clients, you know, what are franchise systems doing to kind of coordinate all of this within their organization?
Well, it really is all over the board. The companies that have the resources available to do it have taken a serious and very intense look at what they can do to make it work better in their companies. I was sitting down yesterday with a client at a meeting in Boston. They probably have it's a large company. They probably have a team of 24 people throughout the organization who touch upon these issues, and they take a very serious and very systematic approach to handling it. I don't think that's the same amount of attention or resource that other companies put to it, just simply because of scale and size. But most companies do have some group that's paying attention to it, and the ones that that use internal resources do just fine. The ones that rely solely on outside sources, I think, are in need of a person on the inside to try to be the interface between the outside consultants and experts with the inside operations. But the ones that I think are unfortunately putting themselves at risk of missing opportunities, as well as exposing themselves to mistakes, are the ones who simply go out and hire a young person to handle it. Not because she or he is an expert in the field with experience, and there are many of them, but rather because the theory is, well, they're young, they use social media, they must understand, therefore, what our needs are and how to accomplish them. I think that's you know, when you say it out loud, you can almost sense the absurdity of the proposition. But nonetheless, that is what a lot of companies do, because it's the easiest thing to do under the circumstances, but I think it's the least effective approach that somebody can take.
Yeah, I've even heard it really simplified as a C-level executive said to me, well, you know, I saw my admin, she was always on Facebook, and I said, you know, you're good at that Facebook stuff, create a page for us and let's see where it goes. And then, of course, you know, 30, 60, 90 days into it, he came out with the statement, this stuff doesn't work, even lended towards it being a fad. And, you know, obviously with anything, there needs to be a strategy and understanding why they're doing it. And of course, identifying the resources, both in time and money that they could dedicate to it, and all the way through to analyzing and quantifying results. What are some of the specific obstacles that franchise systems encounter when trying to create order within this social environment?
Well, there are many, and it depends on the company. Sometimes, and it depends, it's a multidimensional game. So sometimes what happens is the franchisor gets into the game, but they've had some fairly aggressive franchisees, perhaps, who have already gotten in the game and who may already have developed some presence and may, in fact, have developed some fairly substantial presence among the people who've hit the like button, which used to be called the fan button on Facebook, for example, or in a similar environment in Google Plus or in Pinterest or in other places. But in those instances, the franchisor may want to get some control over what's being done because, after all, it is, in fact, branding using the name. It's as much advertising as if somebody took out a full-page ad in the New York Times or the L.A. Times or on a radio show. But they don't want to lose the fan base, whatever it's then currently called, that the franchisee has developed, because that's a valuable asset. So one of the challenges there is to try to find a way to corral the situation and to try to get your arms around it, which is why that Facebook approach of parent-child architecture is particularly attractive, and we can delve into some of those details. The other challenges that companies face face relate to things that are being said about them by customers who may or may not post their comments in places the franchisor and its franchisees can see, mm-hmm. and may or may not be putting comments in a format where the franchisor is even able to reply, let alone know about it. And sometimes what happens there is you simply need to just have a better sense and a better awareness of where your customers are, what they're saying, develop a presence so they can speak directly to you, and you can respond directly to them. And in that regard, you have many companies who look at that and reach different conclusions. Some of them look at it and say, well, this is an opportunity for constructive dialogue. Sometimes it's not going to be all peaches and cream. Sometimes people will have, you know, a beef about what took place at a particular one of our units or with one of our franchisees or one of our company-owned units, and we're going to have to directly reply to that. And in fact, in doing so, you might enhance and burnish the brand and do a good job of showing that you care about your customers and you respond to their concerns. And that's very, very beneficial. Other companies take the perspective that any criticism is unacceptable, and we don't allow it. And they will delete those comments, which may come back to haunt them. And then there are still others that look at it and they really throw up their hands, and they're not sure what to do with it because it's relatively new. It's uncertain what the possibilities are and what the exposure might be, and they're really a little bit concerned about how to approach all of these things. So it's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little bit of everything. We're on a Franchise Today. We're talking social media and technology, a moving target for franchising. Our guest in the second of seven series on the Franchise Legal Series is Lee Plave, co-founding partner of Plave Cook, a franchise law firm with Zing. Joe, Lee brought up a point of identifying the targets but knowing where they are, and you and I talk a lot about that, even with respect into franchise sales and development, understanding the target, developing the profiles. And obviously this is the case now in social media as well. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it really depends if we're talking about from a consumer proposition or from a franchise recruitment proposition. And I'd be curious if Lee has any insights on what franchisors might be doing as a practice in trying to recruit franchisees, and maybe some of the things that they need to be careful of in their social media activities with regards to franchise recruitment.
Well, that's an interesting question, and it raises an interesting concept, which is that it used to be that there was a phenomenon called drop your guard in formality that really took root when people were sending emails back and forth to one another. It was as if emails were mystically confidential and could never be produced or shown to anybody else, and therefore you could pretty much say whatever you'd like. And if you wanted to say something really, really aggressive, really, you know, really raunchy, you wanted to send a joke or something else, it would never get. You could never imagine that it would get released to anybody. You were sending it to your buddy. Now the concept of drop your guard and formality in email context has been proven to be completely farcical. People have lost lawsuits on the basis of emails that have been sent. They have been the genesis of the great public headlines and the downfalls of others. So they've been effective in criminal litigation as well. So that concept has long since been washed away. But there is an intimacy to the communication that people have in social media, and people forget that it's publicly available and it's producible. And we have seen instances in which the franchise development context is the way in which it arises, where statements are made that you would never want anybody to make at all, and certainly not in a public communication, that as to the potential profitability or viability of a business, that reminds you that people need to be constantly on guard for the fact that compliance with the law does not get washed away in an online medium, whether it's Facebook, Google, an email, or even in text messages.
You know, go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, that's interesting, Lee. I remember back when I was with Hardee's and Carl's Jr. that I actually had to go to a training seminar, I don't recall the exact title, but it was about the casual use of email and how to guard against it. All of the things that you just described, and it's funny how these concepts, especially related to technology, get reinvented and recycled, because now we're doing the same thing again within social networking and social media. The same rules still apply, and it's just about people becoming cognizant that the world has changed, but it hasn't changed all that much. The mediums have changed.
Absolutely. The law is not suspended because you're dealing with things online. It's just not the case. The fact that you can communicate from a handheld device anywhere in the world instantaneously doesn't mean that it's not available and that it doesn't have implications when you do so.
Well, of course,
if you yell fire in the movie theater, but you do it on Twitter, it's the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but.
There's the myth that once you hit delete, that it disappears, and of course we know that's not true. I always go back to what Jonathan Redgrave said last year when we had him on the show about e-discovery and talking about that all tweets are being archived, every single tweet, and you think of the millions each day. So it definitely can be found. You know, I get asked a question all the time, and I've got my own opinion on this, but I'm curious to hear yours, Lee. Does it make sense for every franchisee to have their own social networking sites on the various platforms?
Well, you know, when you and I have had this conversation informally over a deli sandwich, as Joe can attest here in Washington, which is nowhere near as good as a deli sandwich in New York, notwithstanding how hard people try. But when we've had this conversation, I think the general answer that we've all discussed is the prototypical lawyer's answer. It depends. It's one thing if you're a business where I'm not sure you can even divide it between service and products, but there is a difference between them. The average I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, but the average QSR restaurant may not need a Twitter account, while the average in-home service business may find it's particularly useful. It depends on the strategy the companies are facing or adopting in terms of how to market themselves and what you're really trying to accomplish as part of the whole the whole approach you take to these things. But I mean, there's a complete difference between, not to, you know, put too fine a point on it. Does every McDonald's restaurant need a Twitter account? I think the answer is different than does every McDonald's restaurant benefit from having a page on a Facebook a conglomeration for the McDonald's concept. I think there's a different answer to that. So it depends not only on the business, but also, I think, on the medium.
Yeah, and I think, you know, lending towards what you talked about as far as, you know, strategy, why you're doing it, and I think that needs to be defined into each of the social media, you know, why you're using Twitter, what type of message are you trying to convey, and then, of course, it also expands into the resources dedicated, who's going to monitor it, who's going to respond, who's going to do so in timely fashion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And too often than not, and I know you write a lot of social media policies and guidelines, and I know I see a lot of times with franchise organizations come to me and ask for some advice on social media guidelines, and I'll say, okay, well, what's the social media strategy? Well, we don't have one. Well, you know, it's almost the cart before the horse. If you're going to put in the guidelines, you don't want them doing this, this, and this on Twitter, and Twitter's not even part of the strategy, it kind of really needs to work together. What does a franchisor do with that proverbial social media expert, you know, the one that got there first and was an early adopter in social networking? And let's take that response in two parts. Where the franchisee has done a reasonably consistent and brand-compliant job, and then also, the conversely, where the franchisee is off the reservation and all over the place with the brand and its message.
Well, it's a very common set of predicaments that franchisors find themselves in, because it is, in fact, what happens in the real world. You know, I think you take the franchisees that have been out there and adopting, whether with or without your blessing, and whether in compliance with their agreement or not, and you say, well, what can we learn from them? Their experience is instructive. Both the good bit, the bad, and the ugly is in essence, something you can learn from. And if you don't, you're missing a valuable lesson in all likelihood. If somebody adopted something and it turns out to have been a phenomenal success, that's something that you obviously will take a potentially very important lesson from. Conversely, if I did something, I wasn't authorized, I gave it a shot, and it was a total disaster, you've got a pretty good understanding that something didn't go right. It may have been in the execution, it may have been in the design, but one way or another, if you parse through it all and you figure it out, you may find that there's a particular hot button that I should never have pressed, and it would be important for you to know that as you go forward and roll out the social media approach that the company is going to take as a whole, and again, deciding on which medium to use, which method to use, and the like. But your franchisees, having been out there, whether it's what you want in the future or not, is not something that you can undo. It's not something that you should ignore, and it's something you ought to learn from.
You know, I agree there, and we, you know, of course, we see online and more so online because there is so much online, but we see a lot of individuals and organizations and some online publications always talking about, you know, the franchisee-franchisor relationship and how the franchisor are typically control freaks and they don't allow the franchisee to do things on their own, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you always hear about, you know, control, control, control. And yet we were talking about earlier about a parent-child relationship that Facebook has put in, which kind of lends towards control. So what does the recent announcement about the parent-child structure mean for most franchisors and franchise organizations?
Well, franchisors like control because those of us old enough to recognize this realize that it's the opposite of chaos, and that's mm-hmm. that's a valuable thing to have. And forgive my reference to Maxwell Smart, but the benefit to what Facebook is doing is they're trying is that the approach that they have adopted, which is something that we had hoped they would, and they've followed the general guidelines that we have given them, is that the franchisee doesn't lose the ability to use the medium, but the franchisor retains the ability to control how the medium is used and to jump in when needs to be when it needs to be done. Look, let's face it, there are legitimate needs for any franchisor, or any trademark owner for that matter, to have some element of review, control, approval, and disapproval over how their trademark is used, how their brand is represented. None of that comes as a surprise to anyone, particularly when customers in one part of the country may be turned on or turned off to the brand by something that's done by another franchisee elsewhere in the country. It's no longer that you as a franchisee operating, for example, in Southern California are only impacted by the other franchised locations in Southern California. Now, in fact, your business viability may be impacted by something that somebody does on the East Coast, because customers may see it, not because they drove through the East Coast, but because it's up there online for them to see, whether it's in a forum where it's going to be picked up on something like Dig, or it's in Facebook, or it's repeated on Twitter, or it's in a newspaper story in a local paper that gets picked up and repeated in one of those media, not with the name of the franchisee's entity, but with the trade name of the business as the headline that reflects what happened, perhaps not favorably. So everybody is in this together, and everybody has a vested interest in making sure that the brand is properly and appropriately represented. We also all, in a franchise network, franchisor and franchisees alike, have an interest in making sure that things that occur online are done consistently in accordance with a thought-out policy, not just ad hocery, and that there is some element of applied intelligence in every one of these interactions. So, for example, customers who complain and whose complaints are deleted by somebody because they don't like to see negative comments and never responded to, those people aren't going to necessarily go away. They're just going to move their comments to another forum. So, mm-hmm. for example, if I have a negative experience at Acme Motors and I post something and the Acme Motors folks just simply delete it, I may just put it up on my own site, and they can't do anything about that. So right. that's not going to certainly help Acme Motors, and if it's a franchisee, they're just missing the point. Same thing holds true if it turns out that that you've got somebody who posts a complaint, and they get a flame back from the franchisee in response. Well, that would be horrible, but we know it's happened. I mean, people are human, and they make mistakes. It's the sort of thing that just does happen. And then last but not least is, you just want to make sure that one franchisee doesn't necessarily gain the advantage on other franchisees merely because that franchisee is more aggressive and out there and a neighboring franchisee is not, and that neighboring franchisee's business suffers simply because they weren't responsive enough on Facebook or in Twitter. You don't want to have a situation where the online world takes over for the so-called real world, which is where the action happens.
Yeah, the action does happen there. And a matter of fact, to your point of organizations that take down a negative comment, it actually it probably even leads to a more volatile situation or a potentially volatile situation where the customer now gets totally ticked off about it and not only just posts it on their own personal site, but then runs rampant with it. And I know I've even seen that where some franchise organizations have posts going out on a automated a delay type of process through some software. And I've seen, posts go out pre-programmed over the top of complaints that customers have made. And, of course, in the customer's mind is, they're posting this and they ignored my complaint. And I've seen that even turn into a very anxious situation. So, you know, by all means, it's out there in public forum, you know, deal with it. You know, in what instance might the parent-child structure possibly not be the ideal model? Is there an instance?
Well, I don't think it's a good question, but you may have got me one on one where I don't think there really is a particularly good instance in which it wouldn't be the right model. The question isn't whether the model necessarily has drawbacks. I think it's how you implement it. And we used to say in the days before the IFA convention, when it came to pass, if Facebook said tomorrow you can do it, how would you do it? And the answer is that you need to, the it being controlling your brand on Facebook, and the how you accomplish that, it makes a difference. So you typically need to go to either have software programming done internally or use an outside vendor who is fully capable of making the kinds of adjustments to your site as well as to the franchisee's sites so that there's a consistent image, so that there's transparency in terms of who is speaking. There's the ability to respond. If I'm the franchisee of Acme Motors and somebody posts a comment on my page and I just, for whatever reason, I'm not paying attention, I'm out on vacation, I'm out to lunch literally, if not proverbially, and there needs to be a response. Somebody needs to be paying attention to it at the franchisor's office, and then take a very proactive approach to responding to the franchisee. To the customer. If you don't implement parent-child correctly, having set those expectations both for yourselves, for your franchisees, and to consumers, then you fall down, I think, in that regard.
Yeah, and I think two key words that I hear throughout a common theme here is effectively and correctly. And I think that just leads towards, you know, not doing this, you know, half-assed without a strategy along with the ready, fire, aim approach. You know, social networking, as we know, is all about engagement. You know, it started out with grab a bunch of likes, then it was sharing, and now, of course, the big thing is engagement and starting that, you know, customer experience even before they get within the four walls of a business. And in the franchise context, you know, franchisees and franchisors, of course, want to have interaction with customers to build brand loyalty and value. And I think this is really a good question and one that probably hits close to home for all three of us on the air. Joe, having spent time with Kitty Academy dealing with parents and children, myself dealing with Monkey Business and Scooter's Jungle, and of course you, Lee, clients that you have that are in child care and child fitness and entertainment franchises. What precautions should franchise systems, and in particular these child care type of franchises, take with regard to uploaded guest content, for example, on a Facebook business page, and such as photos? Are there particular rules they should consider about photos, and especially as it relates to children?
Yeah, that is the most sensitive concept that probably is out there, and it can really cause all kinds of concerns, because parents are rightfully and appropriately very protective of their kids and at the same time proud as all get out of their kids. So you end up in situations where companies that run play centers may have parents who post pictures about the party up on their pages. And so if I have my kids over at a site, at a gym or at a play center, and it was a great party. We all had a wonderful time, and the kids all seemed to be smiling and everything. And I take my photos, and I put them up on my own personal page, and I indicate that I was at a particular location. If that company then takes it and republishes the photos onto its own page, or shares them, which is the Facebook term of art, onto their own page, assuming that I've left it open for that to be done, what responsibility does the company have for having gotten my permission in the first place? there's, you know, there's a thin line in this area. There's, on the one hand, if somebody just simply posted, "Had my kids party at Ace Gym. What a fantastic time. They did a great job. I would love to take my kids back there on any occasion." Well, if it's just a comment, there's a very limited amount of concern about taking that, liking it, and even sharing it on your page. It's a lovely thing for somebody to say, assuming they're not going to find that it's objectionable. It's a fair use. On the other hand, if it's photos, now you've got some other considerations, because there's rights to privacy, and it is a general proposition. And in particular, if you end up with somebody who is depicting minors, you have additional rights. But beyond legal issues, there's the question, the more important question of, is it right? Is it moral? And will it damage the brand? And am I taking a risk of incurring the wrath of a customer who otherwise really thinks that we did a wonderful job? So you would probably want to at least get the permission of the person who posted the photo. But I got to tell you, that might not even go far enough, because if it's a photo, if I'm the dad who took his daughter to a party, or had his daughter's party perhaps at a particular place, and I have a photo and I've got all my friends' kids, asking me for permission may not be enough. You've got to ask the picture. You got to ask the people whose children are depicted in the picture, and some of them may or some of them may not want to have those photos included. So there are serious issues that come to pass with those sorts of things. There's a distinction of some sort here. If it's the parent or a guest who posts the picture themselves. But you have to. But you would probably want to do is make clear on your page that we don't post pictures without people's permission, and then abide by that policy. And that if you see a photo on this page that you don't want to have included, let us know and we'll take it down. And then do it. These are serious issues, and you have to be very careful about it.
And is it enough to ask permission within the social media itself, or would that have to be separate, like an email or some type of physical document?
Well, you got to decide what you're going for here. If you want legal cover, you can put it in the contract that you have, so that when a parent signs up to have her kid's party or his kid's party at your particular location, part of the contract can be a check clause. It can either be an automatic, you grant us the right to post pictures, or it can have a check box, you do or you do not. I think the rather than the negative, the positive check box is far more effective, although I suspect it probably leads to more negatives than would otherwise be the case. But it certainly gives you the unquestioned right to do it. However, it doesn't necessarily give you the right for each of the guests' photos to be published. You would have to actually have the guests themselves agree to that. And some companies do that when the kids sign into a location. They even sign a little form that says, "We're not going to hold you responsible if Johnny turns his ankle or something like that." And with whatever value that may have legally, you then have to question, what value does it have from a brand perspective? Because if my little Johnny has a problem when he goes into the place and somebody takes a picture of my little Johnny crying and posts it and says something like, "Not everybody had a great time," I'm not going to be happy about that. I might be happy about Johnny's picture if he's smiling, but I'm not so sure I'm going to be happy about having a negative picture of my kid. So you've got to use some judgment here, and you've got to think of what's right for the brand, not just what's legally defensible.
Seems like a common theme on a lot of shows on Franchise Today comes down to common sense. Joe, you and I talk quite a bit about FTC and the endorsements guide regarding blogs and social media. I know you had a question for Lee with respect to that.
Yeah, Lee, we have talked about this a lot. You and I have, Paul and I have, and the FTC is recently, within the last, I think, 12 months, come out and revised their guides concerning the use of testimonials and endorsements in advertising. Why did they feel the need to revise it? the endorsement guide to include social media?
Well, the FTC moves in strange and mysterious ways, and I say that as somebody who began my career there. But in this case, their motives and their approach to it is I think pretty sound. They recognize that social media occupies a different place than a lot of other media, and that the conversation in social media is intended to be more of if not intimate, a sotto voce conversation as between two people, or at least it comes off that way. So when I blog at some place and I say, gee, I went and trusted, I visited a new restaurant the other night and, boy, it was really pretty good, and I give my perspective on it. It's a more powerful statement than if I had written a paragraph that a restaurant had put into an ad, or if I had written it and it ended up in some restaurant review book that was published and available for purchase at a Barnes & Noble, if one of those types of things existed. So what they've concluded is, rightfully so, social media, social networks in general, create a more trusted conversation as between the commenter and the reader. And I think there's remarkable that's a remarkable conclusion to draw. I think it's absolutely the right conclusion. And what they have said, in effect, is we don't want to have situations in which consumers are misled when they see something like that without knowing that the statement was being made by somebody who has a commercial relationship to the business that they're commenting upon. And they give a couple of examples in their guides. They talk about somebody who, for example, they post a positive blog review about a product they've tried. It's just a consumer who said, I tried X, I think it was pretty good. They have no relationship to it other than they bought the product. That's not a problem. The second one is they get a coupon for a product, and they say, I tried it. It's pretty good stuff. It's fantastic, in fact. There's no ongoing relationship between the consumer or the commenter and the company. It's just a one-off kind of a thing. Well, in that case, not a big deal. But when there's an ongoing relationship between the person who's commenting and the company on whose product or service the comment is made, that changes the dynamic. It should change the trust level. People will wonder, well, why is it they're making that comment? Is it because they genuinely felt that way, or is it because they're being paid to say so? And the FTC's endorsement guide simply says, you've got to simply reveal, as the blogger, as well as the company on whose behalf the blogging is done, it needs to be revealed that that relationship exists. If you do so, you satisfy the requirement. If you don't, you've missed the point, and you've misrepresented potentially to the customer, even if what you're saying is absolutely true. So you now have to consider the possibility that somebody who has an ongoing relationship to the business needs to disclose the nature of that relationship when they comment upon the services or the products that the business offers.
And Lee, as we're closing in at the top of the hour, I'd like to thank you for being our guest again in our legal series. And we look forward to having Mark Kirsch next week from your office in our third segment. And I look forward to working with you on the technology committee and then speaking engagements we could collaborate on in the future. Thank you.
It's a pleasure. I appreciate your time and Joe's as well. This is a great forum, and I hope that the discussion has been useful to the people who've tuned in to listen to us.
Absolutely. I always learn from it as well. Joe, another great show you put together, some very compelling questions. Give us a quick snapshot of what to expect next week with Mark Kirsch.
Well, Mark is going to talk about franchise brokers and franchise sales outsource companies and how franchisors are using them to recruit franchisees, but more importantly, how they're doing them in a way that mitigates risk for the franchisor and understands that those franchise sellers, even though they're third parties, they still are representing that company, and they have to take certain precautions and put protocols in place to ensure that they're compliant with franchising laws. And he's going to tell us how to do that.
Well, great. I certainly look forward to that. I look forward to your questions on that. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best in this great thing called franchising. Franchise Today is out.